Good afternoon. I would like to call the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs to order. Today is Tuesday, April 13th. It is now 1:04 p.m. and we are in the Gruenberg Room 120 at the State Capitol here in Juneau. Got a little bit of feedback. And present, we have Representative Matt Klayman, Representative David Nelson, Representative George Rauscher, and Representative Laddie Shaw, myself, Representative Chris Tuck. Let the records reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. Please mute your cell phones. I also want to recognize that Robin Stevens with House Records is doing our documenting today, and Tom Raymond with Juneau LIO is moderating the meeting for us. And because House Records is moderating this remotely, please speak directly into your microphone and speak clearly. We only have one item on today's agenda, House Bill 144, which establishes the Alaska Military Affairs Commission. Representative Hopkins, feel free to put your name on the record and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Representative Grier Hopkins, House District 4, North Fairbanks, Esther, Goldstream, Farmers Loop, Birch Hill, and Downtown Fox. So thank you for having me today here to introduce and talk to you about House Bill 144, which creates the Alaska Military Affairs Commission. The idea behind this bill came from the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Back around 2010, the mayor at the time of Fairbanks started what they called the Tiger Team up there. This was an effort brought together civilian stakeholders to make sure Fairbanks was ready for the arrival of the F-35s, but not just ready, also how to put their best foot forward, how to advocate for the community to make sure that Department of Defense knew that Fairbanks was the right place to house that squadron, and to make sure that they outbid and outperformed in the bidding process, in the basing process, a number of other communities around the state that also wanted the economic impact for those F-35s. Education stakeholders, housing construction stakeholders, healthcare, public safety, the congressional delegations, members of the legislature, usually supported by their staff, social service, and local governments were all part of that stakeholder entity. Trying to get the F-35s to Fairbanks was the biggest economic development effort Fairbanks had seen in years, and as that Tiger Team continues to be in existence in Fairbanks, it has continued to reap benefits for the military community and for the economy of Fairbanks. We were able to get the Apache Scalp Squadron housed at Fort Wainwright, able to get the Gray Eagle drones to be housed at Fort Wainwright, and the consultation with the University of Alaska Unmanned Aerial Study Program as well. Recently, we even got the KC-135 Tanker Squadron. And, of course, the Fairbanks has always been scared and susceptible to base realignment and closures, otherwise known as BRACs. And just at that same time, when we were advocating to get the F-35 squadron in Fairbanks, the Department of Defense and Congress was looking at possibly putting much of Eielson into what was called a warm storage. And it was able to find the numbers, find the information, and build that community support to show that we should not warm storage Eielson and make sure that it stays thriving and now growing. Now HB 144 proposes to do that same creation of a Tiger Team, but at a statewide level, because that effort allows the state to have a long-term plan for what we're going to do when it comes to military developments in the Arctic and across the state. This would be long-term planning across administrations and across different levels of government, the legislature, the governor, and communities in consultation with the congressional delegation as well. The Army and Air Force even recently released their first set of Arctic strategies. You have the Air Force, and you have the Army Arctic strategies. And thank you, Representative Nelson, for sharing the Air Force one with me as well. These are going to be huge in our state and allows for perfect timing of this legislation as those efforts move forward. As the polar ice continues to open, China and Russia aggressions continue, Alaska's role will only increase on the national front. As you all know, you're on this committee, of course, the strategic location that we have. But we have to be ready for these developments that the DOD decides are best housed in Alaska and not in Arizona or Hawaii or Nevada. But we have to make sure we advocate for ourselves and our communities, what they can put forward at a local level, whether it's at a Chamber of Commerce or at the hospital level and public safety level for the new deployments of the various military, the arms of our military, and where they'd be going around the state, whether it's from ADAC to Anchorage to the Coast Guard at Kodiak or in Fairbanks. This bill brings impacted and proactive parts of Alaska together to create a commission for long-term planning and make sure the community voices are heard, business voices are heard, and they're able to be prepared. We have to plan, and our economic future can only be strengthened as we look forward to these developments coming to Alaska and as we continue to play our role in national security as it moves into the Pacific area. With these new Arctic strategies, the bill is perfectly timed. And for today's presentation, after I take a moment to go through the bill packet, we will hear from the Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Bryce Ward, who's the third mayor to be utilizing the Tiger Team structure, and then Nolan Clauda from the Center for Economic Development. Then on Thursday, I believe as it's planned right now, we'll hear from more entities who have experience in creating these military affairs commissions around the country and utilizing them in Fairbanks. So I'll go ahead and go through the bill packet now, Mr. Chair. If you start with the sponsor statement, you see that states across the country have established military affairs commissions of themselves. I believe 23 states have these. Many of them have been implemented and created in just the last 5 years. And given the awakening of the national strategic interests, there are certainly opportunities for growth in Alaska. As you see in that second paragraph, a number of economic impact points. Mr. Clauda will go through those in his presentation in far more detail and talk about how just how heavy the impact is really in Alaska's economy. HB 144, of course, creates the commission, but it also gives it a number of powers. Things like how we prepare for new bases, expanded missions and increased training, infrastructure needs, and looking forward to what they need, whether it's going to be energy redundancy, energy demand, housing increased costs, and things like the railroad or bridges, because many of you probably remember the creation of the Tanana River Bridge. That was specifically to make sure that Eielson and Fort Wainwright had access, road access, for their vehicles to the South Tanana Training Grounds. The commission would also recommend methods to improve private and public employment opportunities. One of the things that Alaska is renowned for, and especially my hometown of Fairbanks, is its support of the military. Welcoming them, being ready for them, having services that bring the military members and their families into the community and make them feel a part of it, as opposed to just on the base outside of the community. Also, this commission would work to advocate for the state in matters related to military expansion and decision-making by emphasizing the state's strategic location and the infrastructure and the community support. That was also very critical in Fairbanks' efforts, was the advertising more or less of itself, whether it's the airspace that the F-35s would have going south of Kodiak all the way up to the Brooks Range somewhere, the thousands of miles that would be available and that you could not find anywhere else in the nation. The next page is a sectional summary, but I'm going to skip that as I would prefer to walk through the bill point by point there to make sure we're all clear on what the structure would look like for this commission. So section one. We would create the Military Affairs Commission established in the office of the governor, where he's currently housing his economic development team, and they have a strong military economic development presence, and that's certainly something that we will want to be looking at on the fiscal note, too. The members of the committee would be start with the lieutenant governor, who would chair the commission. The Adjutant General of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs would also be on the commission as the Commissioner of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. Because one of the main goals of this commission would be for economic development within the state, we want to make sure that the Commerce Commissioner has a voice and that is coordinated across the state. The next three members of this nine-member commission would be mayors from across Alaska. These three mayors would need, if you look at the lines 3 through 5, would be, quote, nominated by an organization that represents municipal governments within the state and appointed by the governor. Those nominated by an organization that represents municipal governments within the state is meant to be the Alaska Municipal League or the Conference of Mayors, which is in the AML. That way they are able to put forward the people who they believe are going to be best suited and most impacted by economic development. Those mayors will turn over, of course, and so if something, if a new potential development is happening in a different place of the state, say a naval port on ADAC after we'd worked on a new squadron or Army post in Fairbanks, then that we could get that mayor on there from ADAC to make sure that they have their community voice and their needs are heard as well. Those three mayors would each need to have a military establishment in their borders, so and from three different branches of the military. Brief, question?
Brief at ease.
Yes, sir.
Okay, please continue, Representative.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, thank you, and I'll continue with a more abbreviated setup of the committee, or the commission. There would be six non-voting members. That would include the congressional delegation. That way we have a coordination with the federal level to make sure that we know what's happening at that level and they know what's happening with us. They'd be set to, we'd need a quorum, obviously, and you'd section... the duties of the commission is a fairly important part, but you can see what's there, and I went over a number of the points on the sponsor statement itself. And one thing I would like to point out on section 44.19.863 is number 7. It would prepare and maintain a strategic plan. That would be a living document that would be housed within the governor's office and continue to develop as different commission or different administrations come on board. Then in section 2, it would be housed within the boards and commissions because the governor would be appointing people, and it would sunset at this point June 30th, 2029. So it would be there for the next 8 years if it passes this year, and we'd look at needing to expand that sunset date in the future. And that's generally the structure of the commission, and I'll move on to the fiscal note. The fiscal note provides for, it came from the governor's office. It has, costs for travel. We'd have two of the four meetings in person, probably in Anchorage, and the two others would be virtual. And if they had other ones, we could hopefully have them virtual as well, so they wouldn't increase that cost. But the one part that we've noticed was the personnel services of $124,000. That would include a full-time FTE that was proposed by the governor's office. That's something that I think we can pare down, and we'll be looking to change that in the finance committee at the next step, unless we're able to do it here. But that is something that we certainly want to address, so we're not increasing the size of the budget as we're trying to increase our economic development. Moving on to the next step, next page, you can see some of the economic impact for military spending in Alaska, whether it's defense contracts for construction or for administrative services like running the bases themselves, or the defense personnel and the number of jobs. And again, that will go over by Mr. Clauda when he gives his presentation. Finally, the next page, you can see just the monetary impacts of different regions of the state, and nearly every single region of the state is impacted by military spending, and probably will be more as we go forth and Alaska's strategic importance becomes even more critical. Then the next set in the bill packet is a comparison of various different military commissions and committees. You see in the first column we have what is proposed in House Bill 144. Then you have the ACAS, the Alaska Civilian Armed Services Team, which is an administrative order first put forward in 2017. And it does not have quite the community and economic development outlook that the AMAC would be providing and with the main goal of its creation. And then the JASC Joint Armed Services Committee would not be impacted by this legislation. And I know that Representative Tarr and a number of other members have put a lot of work into JASC, and we did not want to remove it from statute or impact it because it has its own mission that's outside of what AMAC would be looking at. And that, Mr. Chair, concludes my presentation of the bill packet.
All right. Do any committee members have questions of the bill sponsor before we go to presentations? Representative Shaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, there already exists a Military and Veterans Affairs Council with under DMVA. I'm curious as to why these duties could not blend with their existing duties under DMVA as an existing Military and Veterans Affairs Council.
Is that specifically an AMAC acronym, or is it the ACAST? Because the ACAST is within housed within the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
Well, what I'm saying is that there is already a council that exists that has 12 members that deal with Military and Veterans Affairs statewide under DMVA. So I'm just looking at the reasoning why we need a new commission and we can't blend the existing structure of what your bill does with that existing commission that already does military affairs issue concerns around the state.
Certainly. Representative Shaw, through the chair, the point of this commission is to make sure that we are prepared for the economic development and giving the municipalities a strong voice and the business community a strong voice as stakeholders in that economic development to make sure we are proactively approaching and trying to bring in and advocating for Alaska by bringing in the expanded missions and the infrastructure that we need and looking at it from a drastically different perspective than what ACAST and JASC have put forward.
Thank you very much. That's the best answer I've ever had to a question, so thank you.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Representative Hopkins, I was just wondering, has this been run by the governor? Is this at the request of the governor? Is the governor in support of this? And have we reached out to the governor on this?
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Through the chair, we did run the bill draft past the governor's office to make sure that they had some input. And when I first drafted the bill, a 22-member committee, and knowing that that needed to come down, we worked with them to pare it down to the people who are currently listed in the commission who would be on it. I cannot speak to them for support at this point. I would never want to put words in their mouth, but I do know that it was something that they were looking at as they were bringing the economic development team into the offices of the governor. So I cannot speak for them, but I know they have had the chance to look it over, and this draft is what came out of that discussion.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
So as far as the DMVA, have they been contacted? Have they approved? Has this been run by them? And do they have you had their blessing on this, or do you know?
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, we worked with the governor's office for the draft of the bill, and not specifically with Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. So I don't have a blessing from any specific department, but the governor's office did return this draft of the bill to us to make sure that it would be clear who was going to be on it and what the direction of the commission was going to be. So without having them here to be able to say do they support it or not, but we have not received any opposition from them at all.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Certainly.
And just for the record, the fiscal note is from the office of the governor, and the allocation is to the lieutenant governor. So I believe that the staff and the travel would be from the lieutenant governor's office and not the Military and Veterans Affairs Department. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I'm looking at the ACAST and comparing it to AMAC. And would you see, you know, that they have similar powers and duties underneath it? Would it be easier to say to amend ACAST than creating a whole nother commission, or do you not see ACAST working in this scope?
Certainly. Thank you, Representative Nelson, through the chair. There are some crossovers, but one of the important aspects, and Mr. Clauda, you should ask this question to Mr. Clauda in terms of how other states have used this in a long-term planning structure. The ACAST is just an administrative order. While it was created 4 years ago, so it has a decent history, one of the main points of the Alaska Military Affairs Commission that this bill would establish would be that long-term planning over multiple administrations and making sure that the communities and municipalities have a stronger voice so that we then as a legislature have the ability to establish this this commission and not simply through an administrative order that we don't have the ability to amend ourselves. And if you look down in the strategic plan, number 7 under the powers and duties of the AMAC would be a living document as opposed to a 1 year or an annual report to the legislature, and could be amended at various times. And also the way that the AMAC would provide recommendations for action would go far beyond what the ACAST does. This would give recommendations to the congressional delegation, the governor, the legislature, and as well as communities. And they would have that power through the AMAC, but currently ACAST does not have that authority.
I'll follow on.
Representative Nielsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wait, before you begin, I'm so sorry.
No, you're good.
Representative Tarr joined us about 1:15. My apologies. Sorry. Representative Nielsen.
Sorry.
And then Representative Story. Did you have a follow-up?
Yes, she joined at
I'm sorry, and Representative Story. I'm sorry about that, and I'm going to assume about the same time, about 1:15. Okay, thank you very much, Representative Story. Representative Nielsen.
No worries. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair. So do you not see ACAST and JASC as accomplishing the goals of what you put under AMAC?
Representative Nielsen, to the chair, that is correct. I do believe we need to have that long-term, more multi-level economic look at what the impacts of new basing structures and the Army and the Air Force's strategic decisions would have. If you look at what JASC does, it is based almost solely on ensuring that we don't run into any problems with the base realignment and closures. That's almost all of their charge is addressing those. And while and they're much larger and less community-driven and more legislative-driven, as you can see, there's 10 of the members are from the legislature themselves.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we're going to hear from Nolan, so I don't want to steal his thunder when he talks about the economic impacts. But having served as the JASC co-chair and was engaged in some early conversations with Nolan and Senator Rivak about this idea, and I think the recognition of the military as a sector in our economy is a big part of this. And so sort of like shifting that, and so we think about mining, we think about oil and gas, you know, in that list we should be thinking about the military in terms of the economic impact, because it's not just the federal dollars that come in, then it's the, you know, the compounding effect in our economy. So I know he'll talk about that a bit, but in terms of this conversation about what differentiates it from some of these other existing organizations, that was my big takeaway, is, you know, not missing that. And we've talked a lot about the licensing, for example, in this committee, and people's career opportunities. So, you know, really bringing the business sector into this seemed to be like the real advantage of this kind of framework.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate that. I know that over the years, since I've been serving the legislature, we've done a lot to accommodate the military. Coming up here, I think we set off some sort of economic development partnership thing up in the Fairbanks area, as well as done some things, you know, for malls and that kind of stuff to support around the base. And I believe that we did some stuff regarding gun ranges. And we're talking about gun ranges. We're not just talking about, you know, one acre, you know, shooting 400 yards. We're talking huge, massive acreages of land. So I know that in the past we've done a lot to make sure that and I believe hearing what you said, Representative Hopkins, is that Alaska is a strategic location, so I don't know how much competition we have with other bases, but there has been a resounding support for our military, and this is just a way of continuing that on further. So if there's no further questions, I would like to go ahead and take up the presentation by Nolan Klauda, and he's going to be on the Teams meeting behind us. Klauda, if you don't mind putting your name and affiliation on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Nolan Clouda. I serve as the director of the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. And I think if it's okay, I'm going to see if I can share my screen and give a and give a presentation this way. Is everybody able to see this?
Yes, we can. Please proceed.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I want to tell you a little bit. I'm going to get into the military economic impacts and some of the background and recommendations that that a project of ours has led to that helped to produce the current concept and some of the thinking behind this bill and the Military Affairs Commission. We've been working on an effort called the Alaska Defense Industry Resilience Initiative since about 2019 with these major goals of trying to identify a lot of the challenges that go on with the military in Alaska, especially with regard to vendors and contractors that are in the defense space, but also to understand community sensitivities to changes in defense activity, including those economic impacts, figure out how we can help defense-related vendors and contractors, and also to do some work to lay a groundwork for a statewide strategy or approach on the military in Alaska.
Okay, let me interrupt you just for a moment. Mr. Clouda?
Impacts.
Can you hear us, Mr. Clouda?
Yes, I can.
And I apologize for interrupting you, but I didn't catch if you did state your name and affiliation for the record. I apologize if you don't mind doing that again for us.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm Nolan Clouda, Director of the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
Okay, thank you very much. Please proceed. I apologize.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. So a lot of times when talking about the military economic impacts, it helps to give a little tiny bite size of the history of the military in Alaska. And I think one of the major impacts of the military in our state's history is statehood itself. In the 1950s, the impetus behind statehood and behind the establishment of a state of Alaska really was the fact that Alaska was so important in the Cold War sense as a major, you know, part of the bulwark against the Soviet Union. And so at one point in the 1950s, almost half of the state's population was tied to the military, between being active duty service members, civilian DOD employees, contractors, or the defendant family members of any of those folks. So before the discovery of oil at Prudhoe Bay, Alaska was, the military played the role in our state that oil plays now as the main sort of backbone and driver of the state economy. And you see that still today, that legacy, in a lot of infrastructure and big projects that were built with some kind of a military need behind them, or upgraded or improved with a military justification behind it, including the ports and Seward, Valdez, and Whittier, things like the Alcan Highway, of course, institutes at the University of Alaska, airports around the state, telecommunication systems, and the list really goes on. I think that the economic foundation laid by the military is really what made Alaska the place that it is today, as a state and part of the rest of the United States. Now, if you fast forward to the present day, I think a lot of folks on this committee are pretty familiar, have seen that you know a lot of the state's leading industries do a pretty good job, you know, for good reason, of telling their story economically. How many jobs they create for the mining industry, the seafood industry, the oil and gas industry. And you know, these are all major sources of employment in Alaska. If you see here, oil and gas, you know, 77,000 jobs, and it's even more, of course, if you include the impact on state government, mining, seafood, you know, tourism, all of these sectors are big job creators. But there's often sort of a missing piece that causes us to overlook the military, that you don't really have this organized body that's advocating for the military and telling the military story and really being a source of information about the military and what's going on with it. And so part of our work was to take a look at what we know about military spending in Alaska, which is largely contracts and payroll, and running it through some an economic model to see how many jobs that really creates in Alaska. And it produced these results: about 58,000 total jobs, and because jobs are usually, most of the employment numbers that we talk about are usually civilian jobs. I broke out taking out the active duty, you know, you have 33,000 civilian jobs that are created by the military. And that's 1 in 10 civilian jobs alone, leaving out those active duty service members that are also, you know, employed and contributing to our economy. So 1 in 10 civilian jobs in Alaska has a tie to the military, and 1 in 6 total jobs. So there's really no industry that meets quite this impact other than oil and gas, because even sectors like fisheries that might have a few more jobs total, a lot more of the jobs are seasonal and a fair number are non-resident. But these jobs pay more. The payroll is much larger with military in Alaska. So this is a major job creator for the state. And actually, something that's going to be forthcoming. Many of you probably know the economist Musin Ghatavi at the university at ICER. We worked with him on another part of our work, and he used a different method to figure out the job creation from the military. And by his estimates, those numbers should actually be quite a bit higher. That the numbers we came up with are on the low side. So military may be creating upwards of 70,000 jobs in our state, which is something that's quite enormous. This is roughly how those jobs break down. You have the direct DOD payroll. That includes the active duty service members. It's about 30,000 that you see there. That's active duty. That's also civilian DOD employees or civilian Coast Guard employees, and these numbers do all include Coast Guard as well, as well as members of the reserves and the National Guard, who also get money, get paychecks that get spent in the economy. You have contractor employment here. This is the first tier of contract spending, and this is probably a pretty conservative number, over 10,000. And then you have these second and third tier spending when contracting businesses and employees spend money in the economy and creates additional jobs, and that's how you get that total number. That's about 58,000 jobs total. Another way to look at this is regionally, and this is in the interior of Alaska, is where the job impacts are especially important. And you see that about a third of all of the jobs, of all the civilian jobs in the interior, looking at the Fairbanks North Star Borough as well as the Denali Borough and the Southeast Fairbanks Census Area, because those include the Fort Greeley and the Clear Air Force Station, as well as Eielson and Wainwright, that about a third of jobs there have a tie to the military, a third of civilian jobs. And it's even higher if you think about the total jobs, counting those active duty service members. When you see numbers like that, it really tells you that this region of the state is really its main economic anchor is, in fact, the military. But it's not isolated only to the interior. In Anchorage, about 1 in 10, and this is Anchorage and Matsu together, obviously they function as a sort of a combined economic unit. Even though the bases are within the municipal boundaries, a lot of personnel and a lot of contractors and employees thereof are in the Matsu Valley. So the combined region, about 1 in 10 jobs, 10% of all civilian employment, 30,000 total jobs in the Anchorage-Matsu area. So the impacts are quite large there. In other parts of the state, because of the size of population, it's a little bit harder to do the modeling for the employment impacts. But in Southeast Alaska, you have a huge presence from the Coast Guard and other branches of service as well. In places like Kodiak and in Southwest Alaska and the Aleutians, you also have fairly large impacts from the military. In some of our work, we found that in the last 3 years, there was only one borough or census area in the state that didn't have any military spending that took place there. And so it is something that affects all parts of the state to one degree or another. Now, pivoting a little bit, in addition to the economic impact piece, one of the other pieces of our work was that we oversaw a contract through an RFP process with a consultancy called TIP Strategies, and their job for us was to take a look at models around the country for what states can do to enhance and strengthen their military presence, especially with an eye to increasing those economic impacts, to help create a stronger economy and economic ties to the military. And they focused their recommendations around two pieces. One was the establishment of a military coalition or alliance through state legislation specifically, and that's really what this AMAC is really something that fits these recommendations pretty closely. The other was to establish an Office of Military Affairs within state government, and that would be more of an executive office. And I'm not going to speak as much about that one, although it is a potentially valuable complementary piece. So to dig in a little bit more to this coalition concept, this is that helped to inform the current legislation. our consultants recommended these things, that this is what that body should look like, that members would be identified in statute and appointed by the governor. The part about being in statute was particularly important given the continuity between administrations, and that is something with the ACAST group is that it exists in as an administrative order, and over the years there have been different bodies that have taken that place of it when a new administration comes, and that does break a little bit of continuity. Representing military communities, of course, I think is something important. Private sector representation because of that large contracting base and other kinds of business impacts, and that it meets regularly to discuss and act on key issues. And we can maybe talk a little bit about what some of those key issues might be and to build that continuity between administrations, which is very critical for long-term economic development. Now, some of the activities, advocating to Congress on behalf of the state in support of the military installations, missions, and the defense sector is something that's really important. That's, in a lot of cases, the military is considering basing missions and personnel in many different places. And there is competition between places to host, a new mission or a new expanded military presence. So that if you're not competing for it, then you're definitely placing yourself at a disadvantage. So that advocacy piece is pretty important. Advising the governor and the legislature on defense and military issues in the state. It's also true about ACAST that ACAST is generally focused on making recommendations to the commissioner of DMVA, to the adjutant general, and also the governor, but not necessarily the legislature or more broadly speaking. And so that's another distinction too. Developing strategies to both protect, to retain the military missions and also to position Alaska to compete. Both of those are equally important. There are also cases where identifying public infrastructure needs can be helpful too, and helping to recommend, community grant assistance programs to support military installations, some of that state and local intertie. Additional pieces of the mission and activities of this group, and this was all written as a hypothetical before the legislation was here in front of us. So to look at state policies to support military installations and maximizing economic benefits, making policy recommendations to improve quality of life for service members, and this is something that is becoming increasingly important to military basing decisions. And some of you are probably aware of the issue of military spouses and occupational licensing, where around a third of military spouses require a license to teach, many primary school teachers or nurses, a state level certification is required for those professions, and states that don't have a streamlined way to get those licensure, like if they're licensed in another state, to get them in Alaska, that's actually something that especially the Air Force has said will factor into their basing decision. So it's an issue for state policy that needs to get brought forward. And also expanding connections and collaboration between businesses, universities, business organizations, and installations, being that connecting hub for state government, which overall is something that there isn't necessarily a body in state government that really does all of those things, especially with regard to the economic and commercial aspects of the military. And also the comments, some of the questions earlier about ACAST, I would add that the two ACAST co-chairs, I actually gave a presentation similar to this to ACAST a few months ago. The ACAST co-chairs are General Church Key, who's retired and works for the university, and Bill Popp from the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. And both of them are very supportive of the idea of a much more expansive type of a body and concept that can do a bit more to advance economic development with the military. So that's something else, and I would recommend that those two individuals, are as a source of information to this committee. They have excellent background information to provide as well. So those are the main points then that I wanted to mention. I'm happy to take questions. One other point that I'll make is that I think folks in this committee are probably paying attention to the DOD's strategy with regard to the Arctic, and that has gotten into some more specifics lately with the Army recently releasing an Arctic strategy document, and the Air Force having one as well. With both branches saying that they recognize that the Arctic is sort of a domain and a realm for great power competition between the United States, Russia, and even China, and that kind of dynamic justifies and really encourages a stronger military presence in Alaska as the main U.S. presence in the Arctic. And so it definitely behooves, I think, Alaska to think proactively about what that means for our state and what we can do to derive the most value from it. I'm very happy to answer questions from the committee, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I don't have as much of a question as I have a statement, and which may preclude some sort of a question, I guess. But I just noticed that they're just going through all of this paperwork, the slideshow, what the representative has presented, a lot of the notes that I already have. I noticed that between ACAST and JAKS, the sovereignty of DOD, Division of Military and Veterans Affairs, I see an awful lot of redundancy. And I can't quantify the percentage, but it seems to be fairly large here when you start to look at what we already do here in the state, how we accomplish what we do accomplish, and the entities that we have to accomplish those. It's a statement more than a question, but if there is if there's something that could speak to it, if there's someone that can speak to that, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, Mr. Cloud, I don't know if you got all of the question there, but basically all the different entities that we have dealing with the military here in Alaska. What makes this one unique, if I can paraphrase Representative Rauscher, and is there a way that we can maybe combine? Am I catching that correctly, Representative Rauscher? You want to restate it one more time? I'm sorry.
That's all right. I appreciate your letting me restate it. I'm looking at all of the slides. I have a lot of notes here, as anyone could see. I have a lot of stickies, and I don't want to go over page for page, item for item, line for line. But there are an amazing, in my opinion, is an amazing amount of work that redundancy being done by JASC, ACAST, the sovereignty of the DOD here, the DMVA, all of these agencies working in conjunction together, I think, are accomplishing. And I don't have the percentage, but it looks like an awful large percentage of what we're trying to accomplish with this program for the and so I guess I'm just trying to understand the actual need, if you'll entertain that somehow. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to address that question.
Yes, feel free.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, I think it's a good point, and I think I can speak to that well. On paper, there is the JASC, which of course performs an important function. In my understanding, and Representative Tarr and others can correct me if I'm wrong, but JASC generally meets once per year and has a mission of specifically of preventing a BRAC, not a more broad mission of pursuing more proactive opportunities. So the JASC is certainly good and has an important purpose and could well be expanded upon, but it doesn't fulfill this purpose. The department, DMVA, if you speak to the Adjutant General Sachs, you know what he would say, and I've heard him say, and I'm certainly not trying to speak for him, but you could probably hear this from him directly, that military or the economic development aspects of the military and more proactive aspects such as attracting and retaining missions to the state is really something that DMVA is not really equipped to do. He has said that's something that's better served by the governor's office or potentially the Department of Commerce. So DMVA's mission around administering veterans programs and also running the state National Guard are not identical to the type of thing we're talking about here. In the course of doing this work, It included interviews with folks from DMVA, high-level folks there, with the JASC and with the ACAS group, and so the recommendation that they came up with for this stronger, more proactive group of high-level decision makers was something that recognized a certain missing piece. It's very easy to see how, you know, on paper there's all these groups, but in reality there's something of a vacuum when it comes to the state having one body that is sort of the main focal point for military and commercial aspects that flow from it and economic development aspects from it.
Thank you.
Just a follow-up question.
Yeah, Representative Rauscher.
So I guess, is there something that we could point to that we might be able to better off ourselves with following or actually creating this that we may have failed at in the past? I guess I'm just trying to get a real grasp of what we're creating, why we're creating it, and the benefits of doing so, and that's all I'm trying to do. I'm not speaking against it, I want you to know, but I am trying to understand it, and that's the reason for the question.
Thank you very much, Representative Rauscher. We may end up having the bill sponsor come up in just a moment, but just real quick, Representative Tarr. Why we have Clouda here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to add to the comments Mr. Clouda just made about the JASC committee. I've served on the JASC committee, I think, the whole time I've been in the legislature, and then had the opportunity to be the co-chair. And the JASC committee is pretty limited in activities in terms of, you know, one annual meeting. And that, over the last number of years, has been pretty much the only activity. However, when the Alaska Defense Forum took place, we were one of the co-sponsors of that, and we organized a roundtable. And that was beyond the annual meeting that we have. In my experience, that was the only time the JASC committee has done something outside of that. And so, you know, as far as resources go to participate in some of this economic development work, the JASC committee wouldn't be well suited to do that, and doesn't have the membership that could help with that piece of the conversation. And I'll just say that when you're the co-chair of the JASC committee, there's an annual report that's due, and we actually recommended that the statute that enabled the JASC committee be reviewed, because in 1999, when this committee was formed, it was, as you know, talked about, it was really about the BRAC process. And so if you look at, you know, on this handout that's been handed to us, you know, the Joint Armed Services Committee shall, a lot of those things have sort of changed over time because of the evolution of that situation with the base realignment and closure. But number six here, monitor the development of the National Ballistic Missile Defense System and work with the congressional delegation of the state, other state and local government organizations and community groups to advocate and expedite the deployment of the system in the state. That's still a very much active kind of work with Fort Greeley, and there's a lot of investment at Fort Greeley. So it may be right now is the right time to sort of rethink all the pieces and how they fit together. But the JASC committee, in my experience, has never taken on discussion about any of these economic pieces or sort of just supporting the military sector in Alaska. So if that's helpful, I just wanted to share that in case that was helpful. Representative Rauscher. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Hopkins, do you have anything further you would like to add, or does that pretty much catch it all?
I did a pretty good job of summing it up. Looking at the membership of the committees, and Representative Rauscher, through the chair, in response to your question previously, I can certainly understand where you're coming from with that, and these can look similar. But when it comes to what the drive and what the goal are of the membership and the powers that they're put forward with, the proactive economic well-being of the state and economic growth of the state being the main driver for the creation of the AMAC under 144 is an entirely different mission and goal than having 10 members from the legislature and a lot of military members on that commission, which is what the Joint Armed Services Commission, Joint Armed Services Committee, is created with. And so just that entire other option of being proactive, trying to find ways to make sure Alaska's best foot is put forward, and we're ready to support the families of the military members and the veterans that stay here, is something unique to what the AMAC would be providing.
One last follow-up. Just follow-up. Thank you very much. I appreciate your indulging me. Representative Tarr, what we spoke of when you spoke of JASC, is there any way we can expand the directive for JASC and the amount of times it could meet, where it could actually take on some of what you said it can't? And it's just a question.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you. And through the chair, and Representative Shaw has also been on the JASC committee over the last few years, too, so I might have some thoughts on this. But the big difference I see here is the JASC committee doesn't really have a budget. In my experience, we had $10,000 to stretch over 2 years. And so we were able to use a little bit to be a sponsor of that Alaska Defense Forum. But primarily that budget is so that when we have the annual meeting, the members from outside of Juneau can fly to Juneau. And, you know, basically that just covers the flight, the hotels over a couple days, and a food per diem. And so you don't really have much of a budget beyond that or any dedicated staff. So I think you would... you know, that would be the part that would have to be taken on, is you'd probably want to have a full-time staff person, like the proposal here, that has the full-time staff person, in this case, in the Lieutenant Governor's office. You know, it could be housed somewhere else. But in order to actually have someone dedicated to doing the proactive work, I think if it were going to, you know, have the JASC statutes amended, for example, then we'd have to think about the how do we give them some resources to do it. That'd just be my opinion. But... like I say, Representative Shaw has also been on the committee, and so I don't want to pretend like I know what I'm talking about. Other people might have a totally different entire, you know, point of view.
I thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you. And I know that and I also served on JASC when we did the Alaska Defense Forum, and Jeff Stepp was working with the mayor up there at the time, and he continued on with trying to help put that together, serving as a staff to the legislature as well. Representative Shaw.
And just to make a couple comments relative to the direction that this bill is going, and early on when I said that my question was very well answered by Representative Hopkins was very true, because there's a key part to this bill that JASC does not carry, ACAS does not carry, AMAC does not carry, and the Military and Veterans Affairs Council does not carry. And the key part is the social and economic landscape of this bill. The Alaska Defense Forum that we work with under JASC basically deals with defense statewide. And we look at the other responsibilities, like under ACAS, that's primarily Civilian Armed Services Team. And I think what the importance of and the value of this specific bill across the state is relative to the social and economic landscape of the state and the strength that this bill gives to bringing together the different defense sectors of the state and the civilian community. And as you can see, we had a presentation done from the Center for Economic Development. It doesn't even have a direct military connection, but that's the focus of this bill, and I think that's the value of this bill. And having worked across the military community for 20 years, I can see how something like this could be such a benefit, such a huge benefit, because we have so many DOD dollars coming into the state. We have so much potential for growth in the state within Veterans Affairs, within Homeland Security, the State Department. It's huge. And so now that I have the insight to this bill, and having read through it pretty thoroughly and having my questions answered with such depth, I can see very well why the key part of this legislation exists.
Thank you very much, Representative Shaw. Representative Nelson. Nope. Any other further questions? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Tuck, and everyone, and the comments. I really appreciate them. And I think the point would be, and seeing the need would be, to really make sure collaboration was really productive between all of these groups, so people understood what their part of working together was too, because they all have a unique niche. So I appreciate the explanations and questioning that everyone shared. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think the Military and Veterans Affairs Council just recently started about 2 years ago, if I remember correctly. So they're relatively new. kind of advocating what Tammy Perot does with Department of Defense here locally for a lot of the stuff that we try doing for military members and their families and veterans. Mm-hmm. Any further comments?
Mr. Chair, we do have the Fairbanks Borough Mayor on to quickly testify about how it works locally there as well.
Thank you so much. Mr. Ward, are you available?
Yes, Chair. Is this now a good time?
Now's a good time. Please put your name and affiliation on the record, and please proceed.
Yes, this is Bryce Ward, Mayor for the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and I have just a little bit to go over today. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair and members of the House Military Veterans Affairs Committee, to be able to speak to House Bill 144. The creation of the Alaska Military Affairs Commission, or Alaska MAC, is needed to facilitate better coordination between administration, legislative, and local governments across the state. I would echo many of the same comments that Mr. Gluta has made, as well as the sponsor, Rep. Hopkins, did a wonderful job of explaining the benefits of this bill. I'd like to speak a little bit to some of the specifics and how we have been able to utilize something that's similar to this in our local community. Representative Hopkins talked about the Tiger Team, which is a local group that we've assembled and have staffed out of the mayor's office that works on local military issues and really coordinates a lot of the efforts between the local businesses, our local leadership, between our cities and the borough, as well as connect with state leaders and also congressional delegation staffers and staff and the congressional delegation down in D.C. This tool has been incredibly powerful for our community to be able to leverage our strategic location here in the interior and as a state of Alaska to benefit our nation's defense. And in many of our conversations over the last few years in our work with the Association of Defense Communities have looked to military affairs commissions across the United States as powerful ways to be able to drive some of these agendas and policies at a statewide level to benefit the state. Some of the things that I think really, if we're to look at a MAC or a Military Affairs Commission and how it could benefit the state, is really that ability to be proactive and to lean into issues before they maybe become something that is either undesirable by the community or the state, be it a negative impact, military impact to the community, or to lean into some of those positive basing decisions and mission potential out there. When DOD is looking for opportunities to fulfill its mission for our nation's defense. That's one of the things that we've noticed with our local Tiger Team as well, is that the military is really interested in fulfilling their mission, but also doing it in communities that support them. And so when we're able to come together as a state and as strong local communities and be able to provide support for the mission, support for the mission of the of defense, but then also support the families of those service members as they come into our community is incredibly powerful. One of the things that we've also noticed over the last year or two is that the military, that the Department of Defense is really looking at quality of life for their military members and their military families. And what they're starting to do is to look at a lot of the basing decisions based on these metrics, such as education, such as other aspects of quality of life. Reciprocity is one of them. I know that this committee has heard testimony on in the past, as well as other aspects of what kind of opportunities are available for their family members when they're in this particular community. And being able to look at these issues from a statewide perspective really speaks to, one, not only our ability as a state to support our nation and the mission that the defense Department of Defense has in support of defending our country, but then also in supporting the military families that come along with those soldiers and those airmen, and but I'll say service members in general, because we have lots of members of the military that serve in our state. And so being able to have that kind of comprehensive perspective view of things is really important. I think it's something that we have been missing. My time, it's hard to believe I've served almost 9 years in some capacity as a mayor, 6 years with North Pole, 3 years, coming up on 3 years here with the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I've worked with three different governors and three different governors' task forces, and I think the ACAST is the current model that we have right now. My first experience with that was with AMFAS, which was Governor Parnell, And those committees, when they're utilized to their fullest potential, are pretty darn effective. AmFast was able to move forward the Tanawha River Bridge, as Rep. Hopkins mentioned, and other strategic projects across the state of Alaska, securing the F-16 mission here, and then working on the F-35 mission, ultimately, with some of the newer newer executive order commissions through the governor's office. But one of the things that I've noticed in my time in local office is that with every change in administration, there's a huge loss of potential, a huge loss of momentum from those executive order committees, because every new governor wants to put new people on and kind of set a new direction. And many times, if you look at the work that's come out of those committees, after a year or two, they pick back up the same projects, but we've lost a year or two of being able to move some of those agenda items forward. And so I look at the need for a legislatively authorized commission as really being that key to establishing consistency between state agencies, the legislature, and local communities. And I do think that there probably is some opportunities for efficiency between those different agencies. It will take coordination between the governor's office, the legislature, to make those things happen. But I think having a military affairs commission that is legislatively authorized gives it the greatest chance for success to be able to move some of these items forward. So just a final comment is that our nation's defense is strongest when we support the nation's defense families with strong communities and strong strategies. And I think House Bill 144 is really the best opportunity that we can do to move those things forward and be supportive in the future. So thank you for the opportunity to provide some testimony to you today, and I'd be happy to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you very much, Mayor Ward. Any questions for Mayor Ward, Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the Chair, Mayor Ward, thank you so much for your testimony, and the Tiger team definitely has a great reputation, and looking forward to that continuing. I just have a few quick questions. Did you ever serve on the ACAST team before?
Rev. Nelson, through the chair, I have not served on any of the governor's task forces before.
Okay. And a follow-on?
Follow-up.
If AMAC were to pass, would you stand down the Tiger team, or what's the kind of outlook for that right now?
Yes, sir. Thank you, through the chair. So I have no intent on disbanding the local Tiger team efforts that we're working on. Many of the projects that we're working on are very specific to our community. What I do look forward to is the ability to coordinate with a statewide operation on these different issues that we're dealing with, whether it be locally or on a statewide level. So I see it as being supportive of the ACAT, of the Military Affairs Commission, not competitive.
Thank you, Mr. Ward, Mayor Ward, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions? I hope that with that Tiger team up there, we advocate to get more military stuff here in Alaska and I'll snag it all up to Fairbanks, not just teasing. And it's good, really, really good to hear your voice again, Mayor Ward. We actually met for the first time during the Alaska Defense Forum. And so a pleasure to see you still advocating on behalf of our military, and keep up the good work. Thank you very much. Any further questions or comments? Representative Shaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And through the chair, I guess the only concern I have about this bill, and I talked to Rep. Hopkins about this earlier, and he had highlighted this earlier, is the cost of the personal services. Every commission that I have seen, JASC, Military Veterans Affairs Council, literally any commission that we put together in the state, generally can thrive among itself without a $124,000 position. So what we'd like to move forward, and I know Nelson's working on this, possibly an amendment to delete that position and allow the commission unto itself to pretty much run its own program debt-free, as we're all trying to cut the budget as much as we can. And if there's any chance that we can make this commission viable and still gain the strength that we would hope for within itself, it would really make a big difference. And I would just like to make that comment for the record.
Thank you, Representative Shaw. And I just let you know that our especially DCCED, the Commissioner of Department of Commerce, Community Economic Development, I don't know how many boards that commissioner has to serve on. This is an additional obligation on that. We're trying to make it so the Lieutenant Governor has the ability to chair this commission. And so I you know, I agree that you know, we're in a fiscal tight situation right now, and it's very difficult to add personnel and everything, but we also want to make sure this commission succeeds. So I don't know what the best balance is at this point, or you have to just trust the administration on the fiscal note that they have, but we can look into it a little bit further to see if there's any way that we can find efficiencies for that. Just one other further comment. Have you spoken with Chris Curtis with the Division of Ledge Audit on the 8-year time frame? The only reason I bring that up is we're trying to balance out when commissions sunset, so we don't have too much burden on the Division of Audit all at one time. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to look into with them, just making sure. I have no opposition to 8 years. I just want to make sure that's not better served being at 6 or 7 years, just to make sure that we balance the load for our Division of Audit.
Chair Tuck, I'd happy to work with you on that. We just grabbed 8 years because we know that's a general cycle for these as they look at audits as the maximum length. We'd be happy to work to make sure that load is not too much, for sure. Happy to work with you. And Representative Nelson and Representative Shaw as well, trying to make sure the commission does have the staff it needs to be able to function well, to keep that living document of a long-term plan happening, but at the same time, hopefully using an FTE that they have in place and not creating another one is something I'd be happy to work with any members of the committee on.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Hopkins. Any further questions, any further discussions? That concludes today's agenda. Our next meeting will be on April 15th, this coming Thursday, in which we will continue with House Bill 144 and take up public testimony at that time. The amendment deadline for this will be, I'm going to set for Wednesday at 5 p.m., so we have an opportunity to take that over. And if you need more time, please let me know and let the bill sponsor know. So if there's no further business before the committee, we are adjourned at 2:10 p.m.